Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Betfair's Weighed In podcast. And of course, as many of you will know by now, if I have lost my voice, as it sounds as though I have, that must mean that we're off the back of a big racing festival because we've been here before. We've got this T-shirt post the Cheltenham Festival or now post the Grand National. I always lose my voice. So no, I haven't been smoking 20 a day or anything like that. This is just what happens after I've had a good time in.
Just been drinking 20 a day.
I wasn't working at Aintree, Vanessa, were you?
So no, it must have all been playing that did the damage.
Sorry, I definitely wasn't working and I definitely was on the razzle dazzle, but I was like, you know, taking it. I was there, I was cantering, I wasn't galloping, put it that way. Right, enough about that anyway. I'm just caveating this show because of my voice because I know what some people will think out there. But of course, I am here with Kevin Blake and Brendan Duke to dissect, go through Aintree's Grand National meeting. And what a meeting it was. Love it. I just love it up there. Okay, enough of the Liverpool love. Before we go any further, before I get to the boys, of course, this weekend did bring to a close the Serial Winners Fund. Rachel Blackmore's Serial Winners Fund wrapped up at £210,000 in the pot, and Betfair rounded that up to £250,000. And of course, many of you will know by now, that was raising money for the Irish Injured Jockeys and the Injured Jockeys Fund over here. Very important racing charity. And of course, it was an idea that came together courtesy of Betfair. Every time Rachel Blackmore had a winner, £5,000 in the pot. And it's raised a total of £250,000. Absolutely incredible. And that is where we will start, Kevin Blake, because you, me, us on this show, we know how important those two charities are. And £250,000 is a fair whack to be going in their pockets or shared pockets.
Yeah, a massive amount of money. That's an awful lot of sponsored walks and raffles. You know, it's not easy to raise that sort of money. So that'll do an awful lot of good. We all know how important the cause is. So well done to everyone involved at Betfair, at Flutter, and Rachel herself for pushing the bar so high, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something we've really enjoyed following along on this show throughout the season. And it's just been a great initiative and a huge amount of money raised. Brendan.
Yes.
The Injured Jockeys Fund was created 60 years ago off the back of injuries that happened in the National 60 years ago. But roll on 60 years and the National looks very different indeed. There's no getting away from that. But I also can't get away from the fact that it has to have been a positive change. What a difference this race was this time around.
I mean, certainly from a punter's point of view, you would have been doing well to have a bet and not have a chance turning for home, right? I mean, there was so many horses in contention. My preview of the race, I suggest, it's all about stamina. They're gonna go too fast, and it was all going well for the first few fences when they did look to be going too fast, and then Michael O'Sullivan, an old head on young shoulders, just decided, right, well, this is how fast we're going to go. We're going to slow it down here. And they let him do it. And he controlled the race and controlled the pace. And it meant that there was very much a mid-race lull, which meant that I don't think stamina was at quite the same premium. It certainly wasn't as much premium as I was expecting. I am Maximus and Kiddies Like, two horses who are renowned for racing on and off the bridle and just travel like a dream. Kiddies Like jumped particularly well. I was feeling on very good terms with myself turning for home. But anyway, ran a fine race. I am Maximus. I mean, you must love I am Maximus. He's just a character, isn't he? You love your characters. Jumping wasn't brilliant, but it's never brilliant. You know, that's part of his charm. He's won an Irish National now. Paul Townend had every faith in him. I rode him down the inside, got into a little bit of trouble around the third last, but that can happen. It was interesting that Mark Walsh had the choice of the JP McManus horses, but not I Am Maximus. That Townend was always going to ride him. They must have been impressed with what he did in the Irish National. But the Irish National was a very different performance. I mean, he never really travelled into the Irish National. Travelled very, very well here, and then just class told in the end. And he's absolutely bolted up, hasn't he?
He's bolted up, and we will look at the race and the result in more detail, Kev. But to start with, you were obviously there. There was so much spoken about in terms of the changes leading up to this year's Grand National, everything from the fences to the start, the off time, etc. And obviously, we're going to need a bigger pool of evidence years to come. But on this evidence, as they swung in, and as Brendan said, there's about, what, 15 in with a chance, quite literally, with one or two to jump in a national. It just had a feel from start to finish on the day of a very different race. But I'm branding this as a big positive in the aftermath.
Yeah, but look, one thing I'd say, Vanessa, is like correlation doesn't imply causation. Like, I don't think the changes were the most impactful thing in this year's race. Like, it was the pace of the race. Like they went steady. It looked like a steady run race. It's what it was. The fences haven't really changed, notably, in 10 years. You know, it was just a steadily run national, and that's why there were so many heavily involved for so long. You know, there was 21, you know, still with a realistic chance of at least a place until very late in the day. And like, I could only see that as a great thing. You know, this is the race the world watches. This is the race the world has a punt on or gets involved in a sweepstake, etc. And you want those people to have a good experience. And I say there was never a national in history where more people that got involved in having a direct interest in at least one of the runners had a good experience. And that, because they were banged there for so long, five in a line jump in the last, you know. It seemed to become quite an edgy and cool thing to moan on Twitter on Saturday about how the race was gone and it turned into a glorified stairs hurdle, etc. I couldn't disagree more. Look, it's very different to what it was, but you know, it's 35 years since Beecher's Brook was the picture that we get wheeled out on social media every year. Like, the race is long gone from what it used to be, and that is what it is. And there's nothing wrong with preferring the way it used to be if you're that way inclined, but there's absolutely no doubt what version of the race is more compatible with the modern world. And I would argue that it's a much better betting race. It's a much better betting medium, a spectacle, an advertisement for what we do than it's ever been. And if you think it's cool to say that there's not enough carnage, you know, by all means, you're entitled to your opinion. But where we are right now is a much safer place for the race. It's a much safer place for national hunt racing as a whole. And yeah, look, I don't think every national going forward is going to be run at that sort of pace to produce that type of spectacle. But look, the race has never been safer, and it's very important we can look everyone in the eye and say that with conviction, which I think we can now.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, if you're a racing fan, if you're a horse fan, if you're a lover of horses in general, you know, it's a much nicer experience to watch a Grand National and not be flinching every time there's a faller and the carnage that seems to have come with Grand Nationals from the years gone by. So for me personally, I thoroughly enjoyed this year's Grand National. Onwards and upwards, let's talk about the winner, Kev. Brendan's covered many of the sort of main points in and around I Am Maximus, but of course, you know, in the green and gold, it's easy to reflect in the immediate aftermath that it wasn't the kind of Kitty's Light type of story, Corrick Rambler type of story that we so love to see in a national. But actually, this horse has got quite a remarkable story behind him. Obviously, with Team Mullins and JP McManus now, the big dogs in our sport. But he's a remarkable horse. That character, his movement, the way he jumps, and his backstory. There's plenty to I Am Maximus.
Yeah, like he's been a fascinating character study. Like he moves terrible. Like the Irish National performance last year was remarkable. Like, didn't travel, didn't jump, still won an Irish National. Like, it's not like they messed about with him this year. Like, you know, he won a Grade One novice chase, his first run back, beaten Founder 50 over 2.5 miles. You know, they lobbed him in against Gallop and the Champ a couple of times. Look, you know, plenty of smart harassery after the event that he was thrown in, etc. he was certainly £5 while in based on the Bobby Joe, but geez, he did bolt up now. He was very good. You know, the drawing out of his stamina, like, obviously really helped him, and he was really impressive. You know, he was very impressive, powered up the run in. And looking, like we say, the National is a different race now. You have to look for a different type of horse. You can throw your 20-year trends in the bin. You know, you can get away with jumping the way this fella does. and still win a national. And look, that's fine. You go in with your eyes open. You know that you don't need these big exuberant jumpers anymore. You want the ones that are a bit lower, that are happy to that aren't shy about getting low and going through the top of them, because they can get away with that here. And he was really impressive. Will he be a Gold Cup horse next year? Like many are opining, I'm not so sure. But look, he was a very impressive winner of the National, and that's his place in history secured.
Absolutely. And as for the Gold Cup, I mean, never mind Willie Mullins himself with a good handle on the Gold Cup. The colours too of JP McManus has got any amount of runners in there. So will I and Maximus feature in top three? I'm not entirely sure. But Brendan, let's talk about the horses in behind just for a minute, because Delta Work, Manella Indo and Galvin chasing him home. There's something lovable about that. You know, these horses, 11, 11 and 10 years old, been around for ages, won Gold Cups, won at the Cheltenham Festival, won Grade Ones between them. And they're there battling out a finish of a national. It was really class to the fore, and proper like back catalogue of class with those guys in there as well.
Yes, it's some proper old stagers, and Manella Indo has been proving me wrong for years now. I thought he'd have long gone sour, but put in a really good shift. Given it a horse with his stamina, had a chance coming down to the last, added to the excitement of the race. Delta Work, I mean, yeah, like you say, he's danced every dance, smashing horse. The ground improving, the ground was slightly better than I was expecting. Probably helped him as well as indeed Galvin. So classy horses, and maybe this is a thing that we need to look at going forward. That it's going to become a race that's dominated by the horses at the top of the handicap.
And Brendan, what about a mention for David Maxwell? Actually, Kev, I should come to you for David Maxwell. Sorry, I went to the wrong person there. Kev, you can have the word on David Maxwell. Spinning around on 8, that's a shame, to finish in 6th spot. And I heard him say on Luck on Sunday, as long as there is air in my lungs, I will be at the Grand National next year, which I love that. Like, what passion this guy has. Just brilliant.
It is mental. Like, and look, this is one of the, and I do, I don't know where I stand on this issue, because you could argue this both ways. You could say, like, isn't this brilliant? This is something unique to racing that an amateur can compete in a race like this and potentially go and win it, or in this case, run really well. The other side of the argument being, in what other sport can a fella buy his way onto the playing pitch on the biggest stage? And, when, you know, he'd be the first to admit he's a lower level rider than everyone else in this race. But, I couldn't help but smile, actually. I watched the race down. I watched the start out on the track and made my way in towards the big screens. And after I kind of made my way across the track, Maxie was the first one pulling up that I met. And he was there. Like, I don't think any cameras would have caught it. It was well beyond the winning post. But he was just there, just himself there, no one else. And he was literally fist pumping away to himself. It was absolutely class. I was like, oh, Maxie, a good thing. This was the thing, like, it's before the race. You know, wouldn't have been spoken about widely, like, but like, this horse is not an easy ride, and he would have a reputation of being a particularly difficult ride, you know, amongst the Bramhead team. Like, they said they have their best lad at home on him, and you know, the chat was Maxie won't be able to hold one side of this fella, and it could be an absolute mess. And I heard more than one person to opine, you know, in terms of bigger picture stuff, we almost hope Maxie slides off quietly at the first and that let that be that. But there he was with a proper chance turning in. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And then you listen to the man speak, you know, it's absolutely infectious, the enthusiasm and the passion, the madness of it as well. But he took it to the max, and he got around and finished 6th in the National. Fair play to him.
How did he? It's a fair point. How did he get the horse to settle? I mean, he's not a man who pretends that he's a good jockey, but he must have hands like Paul Carberry. The horse just relaxed for him for some reason. He never relaxes in his races.
Actually, these good riders there to be trying to prove a point, hanging out of his mouth there and probably winding them up. Maxie, as he said to Nick, look, it was his unorthodox style that the horse responded so well to, which I thought was hilarious. Well, what a man, living
and
the dream.
whilst we're on the topic of jockeys, from one extreme in a way to the other, from David Maxwell, let's link it back to Paul Townend, obviously winning jockey, winning his first Grand National at his 13th attempt. And Brendan, I'll come to you first on him. You know, like we, it's sort of a cliche to say it now, but you know, lots of people say this man doesn't get the credit he deserves off the back of taking over the job from Willie Mullins, et cetera, et cetera. We know that conversation, but this season really feels like Paul Townend is starting to get the adoration, I guess, he deserves because he's world class. And like the ride he gives this horse, the ride he's given so many horses throughout the season on the very biggest of stages, he's ice in his veins, but he's a class act in and out the saddle.
Yes, well, I mean, I wouldn't know him out of the saddle. You would know more about this, but apparently he is a very laid back character, which must have helped when he took over. I mean, imagine the shoes you're filling. It's Ruby Walsh, who at one time had the biggest job in racing on both sides of the Irish Sea. I mean, that could never happen. It's a wonder it could happen once. I certainly couldn't happen again. So a legendary jockey, and you have to take over for him now. Granted, he was given plenty of time as the understudy to get used to it. But it's a different thing when you become the lead actor. And I mean, he's just a classy jockey. And if he takes a ride in a handicap, watch out, right?
Well, absolutely. We've learned that lesson, haven't we, Brendan? Let's be honest here. Kev, just a word from you on Paul and the winning team as well, of course, because it's been Willie Mullins' this season as much as it has, of course, been Paul Townend. We know that goes hand in hand, but they're just unstoppable at the moment.
Yeah, she looked Paul. Like that really took me back. Actually, that it was his 13th go at the Grand National. Like I think he's 34 or something like that. But he just kind of quietly gets on with it. He's not that quiet, like, you know, away from cameras and that, but he chooses to keep his counsel in terms of the media and that, and that's the way he approaches it, and it works for him. And God, he doesn't make many mistakes, does he? And this, you can tell the kick this gave him. He doesn't give it a big yee-haw too much now, but he very much did here. And if you look, it's the Grand National. If you can't yee-haw for the Grand National, what can you do? So it was fantastic, and Willie, sure, nothing more to add there. We'll talk about the bigger picture of the British Trainers Championship a little bit later on in the podcast. But yeah, what a season it's been for him, and with
Well,
punches down still to come. Oh
let's
Lord.
do it. Let's do it now, Kev. Let's do it now because it feels like the right time. Obviously, off the back of this, Willie Mullins is now at the top of the British Trainers Championship, 200K clear. He's 1-2 with Betfair to win the British Trainers Championship from Dan Skelton, 2-1, and Paul Nichols, 9-2. Now, when the Betfair team read out those prices, Kev, my view was, oh, surely Nichols is a bit of value there at 9-2. Like, we know that he can pull a few rabbits out the hat. He'll be running everything in his yard to try and keep this trainers' championship. But you came on and said, oh, if Willie wants it, he has it, doesn't he?
Well, like the thing is, when you look at what's left, and look, it's the big pots that'll probably decide this. And when you look at what's left, like there's not loads. You know, you've got the Scottish National, Scottish Champion Hurdlers, 100 grand race, Betfair 6.5 Gold Cup. Like there isn't that many major battles left. And in fairness to Willie's team, you know, they had made plenty of early closing entries prior to winning the National. So they're going to have numerical representation, and like they've got so much power that like I would definitely favor Willie now at the minute. You know, it was only, was it 2016? Like Nichols really had to pull it out of the bag that year. He won the Scottish National, pulled that rabbit from his hat, and that was the difference maker. Like he'll need to do something similar this year. And you just I think Willie's very much in the driving seat, as the odds tell you. But what an achievement it'll be. You know, he's essentially, not that he's a non-trier, but he's not, he's only going to spend, you know, 2 weeks of the season focusing on, you know, winning the most prize money he can in the UK, and he's potentially going to win the British Trainers Championship, first one since that man Vincent O'Brien in the 1950s, which when you think about it is an absolutely remarkable thing to have happened back in the 1950s. So yeah, it'll make the last couple of weeks interesting. It'll test The will of the Nichols team, the Skelton team, they're going to have to put out all their stops as well. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. But I wish them well. And look, Vanessa, contextualize, he's potentially going to win the British Trainers Championship in the same year where he absolutely smashes his own record in Ireland. He's already had a season best, so we're not even at Punchestown yet. In terms of winners, he's going to have well over 250 winners. This man is utterly raising the bar, you know, well into a decade of dominance, and he's still pushing forward, you know, try and beat that. Like, it's just incredible stuff.
It is indeed incredible. And I suppose, you know, what we've learned probably from the last month or so, obviously Cheltenham and the way the results panned out there, the interviews and things, Brendan, is, you know, Willie Mullins is always looking forward. You know, there's no point reeling off those back catalogue of stats and numbers to him, because all he cares about is the future. He's ever evolving. He's ever changing. How much of a achievement in your mind will it be for him if he manages to win both the British Trainers Championship and the Irish Championship?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be remarkable. It wasn't something I was thinking about. I suppose it's always possible if you have one of these golden years. Aidan has done it on the flat, where you pick up all these valuable prizes, and the Grand National particularly is so valuable that he's now got a chance. And I think he would. I'd be inclined to think he would see it as an achievement and kind of a legacy thing. Kevin referenced Vincent O'Brien, who is obviously a near mythical figure in Irish racing. And I don't think he's going to massively have to compromise his Punchestown chances, is he? Because the thing about Punchestown is, we all know, Willie had 20 winners at Punchestown, but probably in 10 of those races he had a 1-2 or a 1-2-3 or something. So if they can just pick out the horses that they don't think are going to win, I know it's not quite that straightforward, send them over to the UK, burgle a couple of these prices, start the car, put the trophy in the back, and back home. And yes, it will be a remarkable achievement. It wasn't something I was thinking about. But this is what can happen when you win a Grand National.
You know, I said it to him back when at the beginning of the season, media day back in November. You know, I asked him the question, you know, would you ever think of having a real go at the British Championship, like setting out early in the season and having a real go at it, because you'd surely win it if you did. And he was like, oh, no. Look, we focus on Ireland and we want to win the championship here. And, you know, if we were ever to find ourselves in a position like 2016 again, we'd only love to have a go at it, but it's not something I don't think we'll ever set out to do. And here we are. He's found himself in the position again, pole position, with a couple of weeks to go. So yeah, it'll be. I really hope he does it. I do hope he does it. It'll be. I'll enjoy it.
Well, it's going to be great to follow anyway. The next couple of weeks will be a real narrative for us.
Dr. Richard Newland won't be happy, but I think there'll be plenty of other people happy to see it.
No, poor him. Let's rewind the clock back, guys, and go back to Thursday and cover a few of the big performances from the 3 days. We've gone on a deep dive into the National itself, but of course we saw multiple Grade One races. Many times we saw the Cheltenham Festival form be held up, which is what we love to see, you know, confirming that form. But not quite did that happen in the first race we're going to discuss, which was the first race on the Thursday, Manifesto's Novices Chase. Ilete Tomps upped in trip from the Arkle, 2 miles, 4 furlongs this time around, absolutely dots in, swooping past Ginny's Destiny and Grey Dawning. Ginny's Destiny turning the form around with Grey Dawning. He went off the favourite, Brendan, here. Grey Dawning, everyone seemed to want to be with him. Everyone who I spoke to before the race. Did he underperform a touch here, or has Ellette Tom's taking a big step forward?
Yeah, it's always difficult to know post-Cheltenham how they're going to back up. So you can make the argument that Grade Dawning and Ginny's Destiny finished in and around one another, so they both run more or less to their Cheltenham form. But that was an epic battle in the Turners, and I'd be inclined to believe that it did leave a little mark on them. They both underperformed. But whatever it seems to be about Cheltenham, maybe it's the undulating tracks. He's gone there twice now, and he just doesn't seem to jump as well at Cheltenham as he does on flatter tracks. Made a couple of mistakes here, but they were early mistakes, and he warmed up then and jumped particularly well on the second circuit. He's another Grade One. He's won twice at the DRF. He's building up quite a CV. very, very, very likable horse. Trip versatile. It should be a factor. It wouldn't shock you if he got a grade one next year. It'd be more difficult, of course, in open company. And he kind of half a little bit exposed in Limerick, but I mean he was beaten by a top notcher in Gaelic Warrior there, so no shame. Yeah, I suspect he probably will just fall short in Grade One open company, but I've been guilty of underestimating this horse before.
Okay, let's move on to the juvenile, Kev. Because talk about relief. Relief is the look we saw on everyone's face connected with Sergino, but none more so really than Nicky Henderson. We know the story by now. Bypass Cheltenham, horses running like trains, manages to get them here, and Sergino gets the job done. I think it's fair to say many people may have expected him to be a touch flashier than he was, maybe. Is that fair? Is that a fair comment?
Oh, it is. Look, it came, you know, big reputation. It looked, you know, by far the best juvenile, I suppose, anywhere really, to up to the point where we'd last seen him. And look, it was great to see him win. It was lovely for Nicky. You could tell the last kind of month or so was more than that has worn very heavily on him. And this was a big pressure day with Sergino and Shishkin, and Sergino was the first one. And he won. Like, I thought he was quite workmanlike. I thought Cargese was definitely better than the Bear result. She got very, very lit up, which she had done on her Irish debut, but had been better since. She got very lit up, and I'd say if she had consented to relax a bit better, it would have been more of a race. But look, Sergino, you know, did his thing. It'll be fascinating to see what he does next season. Like, you know, he would have been seen obviously as one that could hopefully progress into a champion hurdle contender next season. Look, everyone knows my view and my views on 4-year-olds. Like, it's a big old step up in terms of class. Nothing to do with immaturity or that. It's just class. You know, 4-year-old only hurdles are a pretty narrow pool these days. And look, he'll need to improve quite a bit on what he's done here if he's going to do that. And look, we'll see where he ends up. But you'd excuse him for not quite being 100% given all the interruption and messing that went on around Cheltenham and that. So we'll reserve judgment on him. But yeah, great to see him back and winning.
Quick Werberg Ring, who wasn't allowed to run on a vet certificate, lame. Is he all right? What happened there? That was a bit random.
Yeah, he was fine. Look, there was a few of them during the week where the Aintree vets weren't quite happy, and they decided to pull them out. There was a little bit of disagreement in this case, but look, they're there to do a job. And while you're upset about it, and the owners were quite upset. Remember, these are the same set of owners that had the same thing happen to them with Give Me the Beat Boys. At the Breeders'
I totally
Cup.
I'd forgotten that. And when I read that, like, Jesus Christ, these people.
Yeah, how's your luck? So look, there was a bit of disagreement, but look, the veterinary team are there to do their job, and their opinion is the one that counts, and that's what the decision that was made. The horse seems perfectly fine, and he'll run a Punchestown. So yeah, there you go. That was what it was.
Okay. Onwards we go, Brendan. Let's talk about the bowl. This was a great race. Jerry bringing forward that Gold Cup form and grinds it out as your 9-4 favourite. Big win for Gordon Elliott, who had an excellent week, really, and beat Ahoy Senor, who was right back on song at a track that he loves. Corbett's Cross travelled into it so beautifully. We were all a bit negative about Corbett's Cross stepping up into this open company. What a horse he could be next year. In the disappointment, along with a couple of others in behind, but hell of a race. Really enjoyed this.
No, a proper race. The two horses going down to the last, the jockeys knew they couldn't miss. I asked the horses up on long strides and they both responded. It was spine tingling stuff. And good, Jerry, just a very likable horse, isn't he? I know he backed up very well last year from Cheltenham, but I mean, it was the Gold Cup this time around, and he'd a bit of a grueler, and you would have forgiven him if he'd slightly underperformed. I didn't think he jumped quite as well this time around as he did in his novice chase win at Aintree last year, but he was able to find a way. And yeah, Corbett's Cross, I mean, good on them taking a chance, pitching him into open company. Certainly didn't disgrace himself. Well, yeah, like you, I thought he was going to win between the last two. But just came up short, but a horse who continues to progress, and we'll see where he ends up next year.
Love to see. I personally really like it when the Cheltenham form is cemented at Aintree. It just feels like a strong season. I like that. That wasn't the case in the Aintree hurdle because, of course, in Perry Pass and Bob Ollinger, the horses that finished first and second after that Stewards inquiry weren't even at Cheltenham. So they were fresh horses taking on Langadang out of Handicap Company up into a grade one. This race, Kev, fair bit of controversy afterwards because of the interference between the Perry Pass caused to Langadang mainly. But of course, there was also Bob Ollinger causing a bit of interference as well, involved in the interference too. Messy, exciting race to finish. Did you expect Imperial Pass to keep the race once it went into the stewards' room, Kev?
Look, I said on ITV about 10 minutes after, I think they'll leave it. I think they'll file it into the too difficult category and just leave it alone, because there was so much going on, and I've had more chance to watch it in a bit more depth, and. If the stewards had come to a different conclusion, I think it could have been justified. There was a lot going on here. But look, first and foremost, what a horse race. One of a bunch on Thursday. They're absolutely brilliant races. It was a super exciting race. And I really enjoyed it. The bowl was a fantastic race as well. But this was, look, I suppose the thing to say here, if you ran this race again in 3 weeks, I'd be back in Imperia Pass to win by a couple of lengths. You know, I think Paul got there too early. We've seen with him before, he can get a bit leery when he's in front. He did the same here and did his best to throw it away, but look, that's the connections of Bob Ollinger. Langer Dan would say that's nothing to do with us, lads. We might have been denied our fair chance to go and win the race on our merits on the day. And oh God, there was a lot going on. And like Bob Ollinger, you know, Rachel made a bold bid in the Stewards inquiry. What good television that was. That was a lot of fun to watch. You know, Langer Dan, obviously, you know, was a bit better than the Bear result, but it was all very, to me, it was all, a lot of the things we saw were very much a case of arguing the toss. And there was so much going on. It wasn't just one incident. It was multiple ones. It wasn't just two horses involved. There was three. And I'm not going to knock them for leaving it because I assume this will be appealed. I don't know. I think if you're of that inclination, you may as well have a crack because this was pretty tight stuff. But yeah, look, Imperia Pass taking it away to the future was the best horse in the race. Great to see Bob Ollinger finish the way he did. They've been really minding him this season and riding him to finish out his races. I thought he was goosed when his initial challenge looked to come short, but he managed to rally. He's a horse with plenty of issues, but great to see him hit the line and Shalok. A couple of strides afterwards, he was in front. And Langer Dan, yes, you know, pretty much splitting 2 160 horses after bolted up in the Coral Cup off 1-4-1. Another endorsement of the job that Dan Skelton did there. I wasn't knocking Dan. I was knocking the handicappers.
I know.
But yeah, it'll be fascinating to see where he ends up now because he'll need a real favour to get back down to the 140s for the Coral Cup next year. So what assumes he'll carry on in grade ones
will
now.
Make it happen. You watch.
Jeez, it would want to be some dose of ulcers.
There were some other terrific results on Thursday, but I think we should keep the show moving. So we've got a couple of other big days to cover. So let's bounce over to Friday. Brendan, I know the way you're thinking, stepping up from Handicap Company, obviously at Cheltenham into grade one class for the Cromwell team, Mark Walsh in the saddle in the Mildmain Novices Chase. I'm going to put it out there. Didn't think this was like, I don't think this will go down as a great renewal of this race. That's surely a fair comment. Is this a horse who can put his hat in the ring at the top level in open staying company next year?
Well, he'll need to jump better, won't he? I'd be inclined to agree with you. I mean, it was a pretty shoddy round to jump, and for a horse to go and end up winning this so comfortably, as it seems remarkable. I saw on the running order that he traded 5-1 in the run. I'm surprised he didn't trade bigger, jumping being the name of the game and all. Well, normally, not in this case. So he's clearly a horse with a big engine. He's been relentlessly progressive on his last couple of starts anyway, so he's getting up to a level where he will definitely need to progress again, but they have that room for manoeuvre if they can improve his jumping, and we know he's a very strong stayer, so the stamina isn't going to be an issue in a Gold Cup. We'll have to see if his jumping improves, he could become a legitimate Gold Cup contender. He may well have the tools in terms of his engine and his stamina.
Actually, Brendan, look, if he doesn't jump well enough for a Gold Cup, there's only one race for him.
Come on, the National.
Grand National.
Come on, the National. Yeah. In fairness, I thought this, I was really impressed with this. You're right, Vanessa, like it wasn't a deep renewal, but a lot went wrong. Not just with his jumping in terms of the passage he got and the response that that he gave Mark Walsh when he finally got a bit of open country, I thought was really impressive. I would consider him in the mix potentially for a Gold Cup. Oh. He's only six. Anyone that took the 13-8 about him in the Kim Muir would have been watching this with a wry smile. I thought this was impressive. You know, only his sixth run over fences. I think he's going to drive on. And I was impressed with this now. JP has some bunch of young chasers there. Lord, I'd say he's never had as good and as promising a bunch all at the one time. And this fellow will be another one in the mix. The biggest problem they'll have now is keeping them somewhat apart next season, because, Lord, they have a whole heap of them.
But Brendan, we know, don't we? It doesn't matter what other novice chasers are in the mix, because the only one we really need to focus on is Factor File.
Okay, right. Well, absolutely. But Factor File is going to face some legit competition wherever he goes, because of all these promising second season novices who'll be around. But that's what you want. You know that Factor File can take on all comers and treat them with disdain, right?
Correct. As a note, I know that what you're thinking is 10-1 from 20-1 for the Gold Cup off the back of that. And of course, we should say we're all sort of in good spirits, pretty high after 3 days of what was in general terrific racing. But one of the real low points of the 3 days was obviously in the aftermath of this race. Giovinco fell at the last, wasn't it? And was unfortunately fatally injured. And, you know, Lucinda Russell's team have come to Aintree before and have had mighty years in the past, won nationals. And then this year, you know, just so much went wrong for them. But this was the lowest blow that they received. Giovinco, very sadly, fatally injured. So thoughts with his connections and the Lucinda Russell team. I actually spoke to Lucinda after that horse run, won at Newcastle on his last start. And they were so relieved. They adored him. And when I heard and read that he'd been fatally injured, oh, my heart sank. But anyway, let us move on. In terms of back to the racing, obviously, that was the first race on the Friday. We should mention Mystical Power winning the top novices hurdle. Again, franking the form from Cheltenham. Love to see it. Goes one place better. Went off the 11-10 favourite. Beat Firefox. Look away. What a horse Look Away is. I love that lad. He's always a big price. He always runs his race. And he looks just a dude as well. But in terms of the winner, Mystical Power, this was much more like, well, it wasn't much more like it, sorry, from him, Kev, because he ran a solid race at Cheltenham. But great to see him in the winner's enclosure here.
He did. Well, look, he looked the winner at Cheltenham over the last. And it just turned out Slade Steele was getting a bit idle and was able to rally and do him. It was great to see him finish out his race good and strong here. Like, fascinating race. Like, I'd say both Mark Walsh and Jack Kennedy on the front two were probably annoyed at themselves afterwards for hitting the front earlier than they wanted to. It was just kind of the way the cards fell in the race. Firefox, they were much more forward with. He ended up in front two out and he stuck to his task really well. He remains a lovely prospect. But Mystical Power, and again, ended up in front a bit too soon, but just did enough. And I'd love to see it again. I don't think there's probably a whole lot between these two at the minute. And we'll see what their progression is like in the off-season, etc. Can they be champion hurdle contenders? You know, is Firefox like to go chasing? I'm sure look, time will tell. But this was, again, another properly exciting race between two, you know, real high-class novices. And it was Mystical Power that came out on top this time. I'd still love to see him on the flat.
Yeah, he's 16 to 1 for a champion hurdle. And I don't know, I wouldn't want any bit of the 16 to 1 about him, Brendan, would you?
Well, have we seen him have a chance to really show of his best? I mean, he was compromised by the ground and the Supreme. He's got I mean, he's clearly got plenty of speed. He got warm before the race, but I mean, that's just the Galileo in him. What are you going to do? Again, the ground in Aintree was probably a little bit soft from like I mean, I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen with the weather? Will it ever stop raining? But if you did get, say, a good to soft champion hurdle on that speed favoring track, it'd be interesting to see how effective his turn of foot could be. I mean, probably if the main contenders make it back next year, he's not going to be up to the likes of a Constitution Hill. But I still think it'd be interesting if he goes to Punchestown and it dries out between this and Punchestown. A lot of ifs there. But again, a speed favouring track on better ground, I'd say you might see a bit of a wow performance there.
Okay, maybe I'm being too dismissive of him if he gets his right circumstances. Let's move on. Melling Chase again, Nicky Henderson, Grade One winner. Here we go. He had a much improved week. John Bond went off the 11 to 10 favourite for this, despite all the sort of question marks in and around him and the form of the yard, I suppose, beating Conflated at the finish. Protector Out was back in third. Envoy Allen disappointed, and the others pulled up. But John Bond really toughed this out, Kev. I thought, you know, he really wanted this, didn't he, in the closing stages?
Yeah, great horse race again. Jesus, on repeat here. Really enjoyed this one again. Great for John Bond. From the human perspective of Nicky and Nico again. But John Bond, like he's been a funny one to follow over the years. He started off kind of jumping so well over fences, and then he's hit a wobbly patch, and he's not always super fluent, and he wasn't super fluent here at times. But gutted it out, conflated, ran a big one in second. I was surprised that they made the running with him. I didn't think it suited him at Down Royal earlier in the season, but look, going this way around with cheek pieces on, he looked much, much happier. And like he ran a super race, in fairness. He, galloped all the way to the line, but John Bonnet is just a little bit better at him. And it told here, Protectorat. You could have said he was made, it looked like he was winding up to make a big challenge there, but he just flattened out a shade. But again, he ran a super race. Envoy Allen, a bit disappointing. Pick Dory got very fired up beforehand. I think that might have been his undoing. But yeah, again, another Aintree, magnificent horse race, Vanessa. Really enjoyed it.
As a side
Yeah,
note,
he's inclined.
just whilst no, sorry, Brendan, you go on.
No. He just did something John Bond has. He's inclined to be involved in proper horse races, isn't he? It's just something about him, the way he pulls it out of the fire again. I'm repeating what Kevin said, but a zesty performance from Conflated, and then John Bond slightly misses the last, has to go and pick him up. I mean, he's a remarkable horse. He just wins. He finds a way to win, unless he's up against Constitution Hill or El Fabiolo. Well, Elixir de Nuts, but we forget about that. That sort of ruins my narrative. That was a weird race. He's just a winning machine, isn't he, John Bond? Very, very likable horse.
A zesty performance from Conflated. I don't think I've ever heard that term before. I like it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's again a horse who's danced every dance. You wouldn't blame him for going a bit sour, would you? But not a bit of it.
I see, I see. The other race we should mention from the Friday, it's probably one of the races that we were, I don't know, I personally was least engaged in, was the Sefton Novices Hurdle, won by Dancing City in the end for Paul Tan and Willie Mullins from the Jukebox Man, who ran another brilliant race, bringing forward, of course, both of them bringing forward that Albert Bartlett form. Are we in any way engaged in this, Brendan, or can we move on to Saturday?
Well, I mean, it was an impressive performance from the winner to turning the Albert Bartlett form around, and it's just it being an interesting horse. I mean, when he was fifth behind Stellar Story on his novice hurdle debut in Navan, you wouldn't have thought he was going to end up winning two Grade Ones. He's an ex-pointer, so he's promising from a novice chase perspective next season, which I assume is the way they'll go for staying novice chases. So yeah, I thought it was an interesting race, but I was certainly surprised how dominant he was.
The side note I was going to make earlier, Kev, was in and around you talking about what excellent racing it was. I watched Thursdays at home on the telly, and then obviously was on track for Friday, Saturday. Now, the two different like viewing experiences just couldn't be further apart. I mean, when you're on the track at Aintree as a race goer, you're basically at a kind of party with all your pals and a bit of racing going on in the background. And to really be across the racing, like you have to put a bit of focus in. Watching at home on ITV Racing, I'm not just saying this to blow smoke up their asses, but honestly, I just sat back for 2.5 hours and I couldn't have loved it anymore. Every angle, every bit of like all the intel you get, the interviews. I mean, if you want to just enjoy horse racing, stay at home. If you want to have a party, go to the track, right? I mean, you were there all weekend. You probably had a completely different experience to me as well. But there's a stark contrast in terms of what you see.
Yeah, well, this is it. And in fairness to ITV, like, oh, geez, they had some array of cameras this week. Like, they had a helicopter all week, which was absolutely fantastic. You know, it really was. You know, drones can give you that insight, but a helicopter just... and the reason why, like, and I actually asked the question, but, you know, someone has to ask the stupid questions occasionally. Like, why are you spending all the money on the helicopter when you can just send the drone up? And the answer was quite interesting. Apparently, when you use a drone on a race course, like, you're very restricted what you can do with it. Like, there's super strict flight paths and restrictions. You know, all rooted in safety, health, probably. That's the cause of most evils in this world, isn't it? But sorry, health and safety, men and women. But the helicopter, it's obviously a much more robust piece of equipment, and it's human controlled, etc. So they can, I'm sure they can't do everything that they'd love to do, but they can do an awful lot. And geez, it produced some fantastic footage. And I tell you, historically there would have been a fair bit of resistance from the racing authorities, UK and Ireland, about the use of drones, etc. But I did find that there was some irony in the stewards, I reckon, heavily leaning on the helicopter footage for the stewards' inquiry for the entry hurdle, because you can just see things better from up there. You know, it's a better angle, and when you don't have it, you miss it. Hopefully, it becomes the norm. Look, you can only imagine how the cost of something like that is substantial, but you'd love to see the drones being given a bit more freedom. Like, that's unbelievable technology that we should be utilizing. There in the course of conversation during the week, I was showing a few videos of what they're doing with drones and some other kind of high speed sports. It's just unbelievable what they can do. But we're going to need our regulators to loosen up a little bit regarding their use and allow us to showcase the sport as best we can, because there's wild potential in that field.
There is, but there is also obviously, like, you know, the risks involved when you've got horse flesh and all of the things that come into account when you're trying to sort of take those camera angles closer to the line, as close as you can get to the action, I suppose. There is a line that has to be drawn around horses, obviously.
Just... Yeah, but one point I make is they're all like, oh, well, if you lose contact with a drone and it falls on top of horses, not going to happen, lads. If you've ever used a drone, if the battery runs out or if you lose contact, it gently floats down to earth. And these race horses are pretty fast. They'll be long out of the way by the time the drone gets down to horse height. I know it's not as simple as that, but these aren't insurmountable things. That they use drones really well. Actually, out in the Middle East, if you watch the racing out there, they're being really creative with how they use their drones in racing, without the hammer of health and safety and bureaucrats hanging over them. With a bit of freedom, they can do some great things.
What were you just about to say, Brendan? Were you about to chime in?
No, I wasn't necessarily going to chime in, but I'm always wary of people say, oh, it's so much easier to do things in the Middle East, but it's a bit easier to get yourself into trouble over there as well. So it's not a terrible thing living in a Western democracy. I just make that point.
But the drones, Brendan, the drones.
Come on, the drones. Brendan, talk to me about brighter days ahead, please, in the Turner's Mersey Novices Hurdle, in against the boys, and absolutely bolts up, obviously, putting in the sort of performance Team Gordon Elliott and Jack Kennedy expected to see in the mares and novices hurdle at Cheltenham, but she went off the 6-5 favourite here, but she beat a 20-1 shot and a 50-1 shot. Jimmy Desoy and Il Atlantique, the two kind of maybe disappointing somewhat for the team, for the Mullins team, but she was, I mean, I watched this live and I was like, wow. And then when I watched the race back, I thought, oh, has the form let her down there? What side of the fence do you sit on here?
Well, I've the opinion with her, and it's understandable because she's still a relatively inexperienced horse, that she's still a work in progress. And I think the there was some comment about Jack's ride in the Mare's Novice Hurdle. There's no doubt she was compromised by the tepid fractions there. But what was Jack supposed to do? She was keen. He had to get her to settle. And again, she was inclined to take a bit of a grip early here, and he got her to switch off, and another improved performance. Couple of squiffy jumps again. Her jumping isn't all pinpoint, but this is exciting, isn't it? Because there are things that you can work on as she evolves, and she is beginning to relax better in her races, and she generally jumps better, certainly than she did in Down Royal, and she has that storied pedigree. Clearly has the looks given the money she cost. As a star, I would guess they would lean towards going chasing. Given who owns her, and again all the mighty potters and likes, the horses who improved for jumping fences in her family. So I guess that's the way she goes. I think she is the real deal, and I think she'll only improve with racing.
Terry, this was one of the all time bad beats for followers of Gordon's Glint at Cheltenham, wasn't it? How did she get beat?
Tops the list, Kev, I'm afraid, especially as we gave it the big one on this show. Just to jump in there, Bryce Day's Head is 4-1 for the Mare's Hurdle next year, but 3-1 for the Mare's Chase. So
I don't think they'll do it.
I've got to just pull out the prices, Kev.
I know. And it gives me the chance to swat him away, because I met Gordon afterwards and we were just talking about her, and he was floating. And I go, what are we going to do with her? And he said, well, you can win all the mares races you want. And he kind of looked at him, and I looked at him, because that's not really you, Gordon. I don't think that's really the O'Leary's either. And then,
not his bag.
No.
It's not his bag.
Hopefully she goes chasing. I thought she was brilliant here. Race went to bits a bit, but gee, she was running away everywhere, and she's such a beauty. God, you'd be getting all Gordon Glint aside, you'd have to be wildly excited about her, and I really hope she goes chasing, because that would be fun.
Now, talking about the ups and like the pros and cons of staying at home or going racing, big pro of going racing is seeing a horse like Bryce Days Ahead in the paddock. Absolute beauty. And if you're a fan of horses, a fan of horse flesh and breeding, and just what an equine athlete should look like, go and take a look at her in the paddock on a sunny day, and you could watch her all day long. I was really pleased, Kev, for Gordon. You mentioned that he bumped into him and he was sort of floating. He had a hell of a week. 3 grade ones, including Founder 50. You can give a note to now before we link back to Strong Leader, but we might as well whilst we're on the Gordon train here. But almost an under-celebrated week in a way. It sort of went by slightly. Then he won 3 grade ones, Gordon Elliott, this week. And with horses that, you know, have really shown up for him this season, including Founder 50, a second grade one for him.
Yeah, look, he had a real whack at it, made a very deliberate move to focus on this meeting rather than Punchestown, and 3 grade ones is a huge return. Founder 50, you know what this was, Vanessa? This was a serious horse race. This was, again, an awful lot of fun to watch. Beaten, winning, finds a way to get back up on the line. Master Chewy ran an absolute belter, in fairness to him. It wasn't him shirking, it was the other fella really sticking his head down.
He wanted it, he did,
and this horse, in fairness to him, what a pleasure he must be to be involved with, because I don't think he's one of the very best novice chasers around, but my God, he's turned up every single day this season. That was run number 6, you know, he's beaten by Aya Maximus and the Drinmore, you know, he's won the grade one at Leopardstown's Christmas meeting, he's got nudged out at the Dublin Racing Festival, had to play second fiddle to Gaelic Warrior at Cheltenham, and all that work, all that body of work, not a bother to him, turns up at 8 entry and shows his guts in no uncertain terms and gets his second grade one. So, and I tell you what, you'd say you'd have to be delighted for Nolan Valerie Moore and Bective Stud. They have thrown so much money at the game in an effort to have big horses. And this horse has brought him around to all the big gigs and two grade ones, including one on Grand National Day. Absolutely super.
Yeah, brilliant. No, really good. Brendan, you can have Strong Leader, who won the Liverpool Hurdle, the Stayers Hurdle from Buddy One and Hidden Valley Lake back in third. Hidden Valley Lake was your... Was that the horse you fancied, Brendan?
Yeah, I'm just trying to come at it from a different angle, from the more established Stayers. Ran a fine race, jumped particularly well, very likable horse. They may opt to go back chasing with him next season. I'm not even sure why they abandoned novice chasing. I know he fell in Navan on his chase debut, but had jumped perfectly well up to that. So there must be a reason, but they would have the option to go back novice chasing next year. So or next season, should I say. So I don't know what's going to happen. The winner was very good. He seems to like Aintree, doesn't he? He's running on really strongly last season, and again put in a really strong finish here. That's long home straight seems to suit him. And in fairness to Ollie Murphy, not necessarily a trainer I'm the biggest fan of, but he's done a good job with this horse.
He has indeed, and he's having a really good season, specifically in the last couple of weeks as well.
He got some kick out of it, didn't he? It was great to see. He got a real kick out of that. Quite emotional afterwards. Meant an awful lot to him. Great to see it.
Yeah, no, he's really sort of enjoying the victories. And why shouldn't he as well? He's having an excellent time of it. That about wraps up, I think, our Aintree wash-up. This has basically been an Aintree wash-up show, but there's nothing wrong with that because we're just basking in the glory of an excellent 3 days of racing, or as Kev has summarised, serious horse racing. Let's do highlights, something to mention, maybe that we haven't already or that we have. Boys, I'll go first. What did I love about Aintree this year? Other than Pop World is somewhere that I have never got to before. Do you know what Pop World is, Brendan?
I don't know what Pop World is, no.
And you can take it for granted that I don't.
Yeah, it's a nightclub, like a chain of nightclubs, I think. But everyone goes to Pop World in Liverpool, right? And for about 7 years, everyone has gone there. And I have just never got there. I either get lost, I get into another bar, I go home early. Like I never get there. It's like the promised land for me, this place, right? And I eventually got myself into Pop World with a gang of us the other night. And I walked up the stairs and I was like, this is it. I've got into Pop World. And as soon as I walked up the stairs, I was like, why does everybody want to get into Pop World? I mean, it's literally like the shittest nightclub you've ever been.
Hold on. In Pop World's defense, Vanessa, how could it possibly live up to your expectation? You had built it up in your imagination over all these years. It couldn't be anything but a disappointment.
True. And I was the only one in there with my racing hat on and like all my racing.
Oh, no.
I had a great couple of hours, danced my life away and then left. And I was like, maybe that'll be the first and last time I go to Pop World. And that's where I left my voice as well, actually. So the highlight for me was getting in and enjoying for a limited amount of time only Pop World, basically. But in terms of on the track excitements, I think the highlight for me was Nicky Henderson having those two grade one winners. I was delighted for him. I think, as you mentioned, Kev, he has, you know, he wears his heart on his sleeve, doesn't he? And you could tell that the pressure of Cheltenham and the horse is not running well was really getting to him. And we need him in British jump racing to be firing on all cylinders. So for him to be back with Sergino and John Bond, I was really, really pleased for that team. So that was my highlight. Kev, over to you for yours. Anything that we've mentioned or haven't mentioned? It's your plan.
I think it has to be the big one, Vanessa. I really enjoyed the big one. And like all the bigger picture stuff that is so important, you know, all the boxes were ticked. You know, so many people would have enjoyed that race, whether they had a better or were stuck in a sweep or didn't have any of that type of involvement. I felt it was just a really enjoyable race. And look, it's very different to what it used to be, but you know, the world changes, the world moves, and the Aintree people, you know, decided to move with it rather than dig their heels in. Because if they had dug their heels in, you know, I don't know where we'd be with the National now, if we'd even still have it anymore. The way things have moved, I think this race, as we know it now, is sustainable. It has a future. Will it always look like this? No, it won't. And you'll always be vulnerable to bad luck. But you know, I think they've done the right things along the way. It was a fantastic horse race, a great representation of National Hunt racing. Because whether we like it or not, Vanessa, and it's not something you'd necessarily choose if you had the choice, this race is the front line for jumps racing. This is the one it's judged on amongst a much, much wider audience than we can even contemplate. You know, tens of millions of people watch this race all around the world, maybe hundreds of millions, depends who you believe. And we need it to be a good representation of what we do, because anything involving animals is going to come under, is already coming under heavy scrutiny. The scrutiny is going to get even heavier. And we need our social license. And an important part of that is that the Grand National represents our sport well on that stage. And it duly did that on Saturday.
Well said, well said. And onwards we go. Brendan, your highlight, anything else to add in? What did you love about the 3 days of Aintree?
Well, I loved it again, as we've discussed, there were just so many exciting races with close finishes, numerous top class races at that. So many to pick from, but I would probably end up going with John Bob. I thought that was a brilliant race, but conflated him with a chance coming down to the last, protected him with a chance coming down to the last, and John Bob pulling it out of the fire. Very exciting.
In terms of sort of post-festival wrap-up comments, you know, that felt like quite a negative vibe in the aftermath of Cheltenham for loads of different reasons, loads of different reasons on and off the race course. Whereas in the aftermath of Aintree, it just feels like we're really in quite the celebratory mood. So let's keep on that roll. You know, let's stay positive. We all here in the media, you know, we need to celebrate the good days and the good festivals because we do a lot of moaning.
Oh, yeah.
And come on, the pop world. I did it. I got it. I think that about wraps up the show. We have Romantic Style on the running order. She won over at Deauville at the start of last week. Feels a very long time ago. The Group Three over there, she beat Ramatuelle. They've changed for the French Guineas in terms of price. Romantic Style 5-1 from 10s. Ramatuelle 5-1 from 2-1. Kev, do you want to add anything in terms of anything sort of international racing wise at the end of the show, or should we just wrap up?
No, I'll tell you, I'll mention Pride of Jenny in the Queen Elizabeth Stakes down in Randwick. This is what we call in this podcast a broken race, only it happened in a Group One. This mare just absolutely danced away and took up an unassailable lead. The section will tell you that everyone in behind got it wrong, and she ended up winning by 6.5 lengths. But who was in the saddle, Vanessa? This is the real rub to this story that hasn't got a big run out. It was Declan Bates, who is an Irishman, and you might have lost track of him. He used to be riding winners over jumps for Philip Rothwell there, kind of over 10 years ago. And like a bunch of his countrymen have gone down to Australia. Johnny Allen, another one in a very similar boat, would have been considered, with all due respect, a journeyman jumps jockey when riding in Ireland, and they've gone down and they're absolutely whacking it clean out of the park down in Australia. And this was a Group One win worth the equivalent of something like 1.6 sterling to the winner. So well done, Declan. You rode those Aussies to sleep. Magic.
Wow, yeah, if you haven't seen that, catch that on social media. It's an incredible watch. The camera angle has to stay extremely wide throughout to keep all horses in shot. But yeah, extraordinary scenes down in Australia. Look, I think we should wrap up, guys. We slightly run out of time. We will, of course, have plenty to cover this time next week because we've got air to look forward to at the weekend. We'll be covering that on Racing Only Better. But for now, Kevin Blake, Brendan Duke, thank you very much. Have a good week. Enjoy yourselves. Listeners and viewers out there, thank you very much for tuning in as always. And join us again on Thursday, where we'll be talking all things air. But for now, good luck and goodbye. That was Weighed In.